This feature has been brought to you by Slot Foundation, which needs your support to continue projects like these. Information on this recording and access to other recordings is available online at slot.org.
We were saying in some group or other that most of the people on the panel in the morning have a generation before most of the people sitting there had certain questions to confront that have been answered by them in the ways they try to describe, which perhaps don't at all answer the questions that people would ask if they would ask them, which they don't. And I, for this reason, Duncan said that he had written some horrible poetry when he was emerging, and so did I. And I'm reading some of mine. I have never read these poems, and I've never published them, and I've never let anybody look at them. The first three are love poems in the same situation, which will be recognizable. I was 17. In those first days, you moved as if through stellar space, and I glued to telescope, exclaimed, watching your revolutions, saw full round and drummed the imminent eclipse, and sang wild songs into that rushing sky that flew apart aflame as orbit clenched to consummation. Now the waters have flowed back to quietness, the branches stir in rain, birds easy in their green intricacies. What was once round and bright and far stretches rich under sun, strange under the furious dark or the tall marble shadow of morning, league on league. If now, I said, your hands are beautiful, it would be true, but what a meager truth to all that holds me voiceless, choked with fear, if the new earth, where now is all my breath, should turn me night and space again and starless. The second one, and the rhythmic change, I didn't plan exactly. What a buffoon in small am I to so instruct your planned retreat, or even to presume that you will my far voice admit. And yet, if I could cease to be, I would impel such bloom of lonely light about your day as no sky here has shown. I would wrap round your sharpest air such wingfold gentleness that you impregnably could wear your burden of noblesse. And when you slept, I would unclose so fair a weird to view that upon waking you could pace time's broadest avenue. But cozened in such excellence I see you, singled now, I, not being, darling prince of peoples, knowing you for good, can only breed offense out of absence. And this is the third. With the purpose of reading, which won't appear till we end. Two pillars, twinned in ponderous function, are irrevocably mute and deaf. Absurdly selfless, they measure out of golden space that silvered emptiness the gods can breathe and so endure. This is no metaphor for you and me, except in lies, or as pillars glare out of a roofless place of desecration. Yet laughter in the Chinese hills runs still by evening waterfalls. Our morning cobalt glitters steeply off, thrusting us from it. What the alcoholic at Queen and Sherburne gambled can be lost under the summer lilacs by attrition tempered by vegetable juices. The diction is pretty terrible. So much for my youth. This is going to be over rather fast, I think. This is is called A Poet's Preface. Perhaps I track you down. The one who is it steps clumsily, knowing she looms abruptly in air, whereas the others have found privacy under green roofs or behind some sweet-smelling, hot, dusty wooden fence, or to take on a belly-crawling life-and-death one-man guerrilla war. With my authority, I stumble past ambush, keeping the rules, till I wrest you from your roles by mine, back to the sun-gold, sad society of the last hours of play. I've got four here, which are a technique I don't know whether other people do. I learned about it from somebody who was part painter and part writer and used to do sketches. And I very rarely work a sketch over or up or anything, but I like sketches all the same. And I put these in because the first one I did the Saturday after I arrived, when I was still able to see Vancouver fresh after Toronto, which is a lot of brick and cement and heavy structures, where your winters aren't as severe. The buildings look very different at first with the foliage and all. So I was walking along and I saw a sign, sleeping rooms, and I sat in the grass across from my house, and this is Vancouver's street sketch. A sleeping room, I've never heard that. A housekeeping room, I've known. But the sleeping one in a tea-steepy, clap-doodle, whey-gum, dimity-toothed house, letting rooms, and I square my shoulders, and sitting here across on the grass with a single grass seed top shadow casting over my shoulder, brazen the thought of a sleeping, of rooms, of reeks looming, and boarding under these boards. And the next three are also sketches of that same kind of playing around, but these are all portrait sketches, people. The first two, I was sitting in a reading room and there were people walking past through a glass wall the other side of the reading room. He whips his legs along slip-slot. It is, as it were, a lightly weighted, pointlessly doubled cord on a blind, tapping and trapped in a windy, empty, empty, moon-over room. There's somebody else walked by that same wall. He was an old fellow. I think he worked in the receiving office or something like that. Until his mustache turned ash white with tan jawline to cheekbone, clam whirled with white smile and squint lines and the eyelashes pale, pale and coarse, bristles almost. Until these colors this July, I did not see how one after one, he, Batman, before the jazz age, cared for. And plodding now, still faithfully attends, and though his granddaughter is in ginghams and dances in the cement court among spring-tissued oak leaves, would flounder after still, or be born in their glossy groundswell now, I see. And the third one is a pair of people. Uncommon to be sick and tired of grass, this woman said she was. She lives in a functional apartment with a blind with a handle dangle that is a birdcage and has a bird in it. Her husband, after supper, could, for garden beds, hold with his paw the very nozzle almost at the point of flow, lilting the hose length to him with power, with simplicity, serious at bedrock. Ones in the book. I'm going to read a few from front to back, here and there. Public address. You cough too much. The curd in the esophagus is a brave burgeoning, but the rootsy was plummet your groin. Cough not, then bear you like a man, or clean you like a fish. The swimmer's moment. For everyone, the swimmer's moment at the whirlpool comes. But many at that moment will not say, "This is the whirlpool, then." By their refusal, they are saved from the black pit and also from contesting the deadly rapids and emerging in the mysterious and more ample further waters. And so their bland, blank faces turn and turn, pale and forever, on the rim of suction they will not recognize. Of those who dare the knowledge, many are whirled into the ominous center that gaping vertical seals up for them an eternal boon of privacy, so that we turn away from their defeat with a despair not for their deaths, but for ourselves, who cannot penetrate their secret nor even guess at the anonymous breadth where one or two have won the silver reaches of the estuary. When I arranged poems before, I never put them in the order I have this time, and I'm seeing them from another face, and it's kind of fun. But it's going to be over awfully fast. Thaw. Sticky inside their winter suits, the Sunday children stare at pools and pavement and black ice where roots of sky in moodier sky dissolve. An empty coach train runs along the thin and sooty river flats, and stick and straw and random stones steam faintly when its steam departs. Lime water and licorice light wander the tumbled streets. A few sparrows gather. A dog barks out under the dogless pale, pale blue. Move your tongue along a slat of a raspberry box from last year's crate. Smell a saucepan tilt of water on the coal ash in your grate. Think how the Black Death made men dance. And from the silt of centuries, the proof is now scraped bare that once Troy fell and Pompeii scorched and froze. A boy alone out in the court whacks with his hockey stick and quacks in the wet, and the pigeons flutter and rise and settle back. And this last one, because I was trying to fight my way out of that language, and all I got into was the language in which I earn my living, doing research jobs and proofreading jobs and things. It's called voluptuaries and others. The Eureka of Archimedes out of his bath is the kind of story that kills what it conveys. Yet the banality is right for that story, since it is not a communicable one, but just a particular instance of the kind of lighting up of the terrain that leaves aside the whole terrain, really, but signalizes and compels an advance in it. Such an advance through a, be it what it may, but take it not quite as given, locale. Probably that is the core of being alive. The speculation is not a concession to limited imaginations. Neither is it a constrained voiding of the quality of imminent death. Such near values cannot be measured in values just because the measuring consists in that other kind of lighting up that shows the terrain comprehended as also its containing space and wipes out adjectives and all shadows, or perhaps all but shadows. The Russians made a movie of a dog's head kept alive by blood, controlled by physics, chemistry, equipment, and Russian women scientists in cotton gowns with writing tablets. The heart lay on a slab midway in the apparatus and went fluff, fluff. Like the first kind of illumination, that successful experiment cannot be assessed either as conquest or as defeat. But it is living, creating the chasm of creation, contriving to cast only man to brood in it further. History makes the spontaneous jubilation at such moments less and less likely, though, and that story about Archimedes does get into public school textbooks. I'm going to do this one from back to front. In a season of unemployment, Christie Pitts, Toronto, if anybody knows Toronto. These green-painted park benches are all new. The park commissioner had them planted. Sparrows go on having dust baths at the edge of the park maple's shadow, just where the bench is cemented down, planted, and then cemented. Not a breath moves this newspaper. I'd rather read it by the Lapland sun at midnight. Here we're bricked in early by a stifling dark. On that bench, a man in a pencil-striped white shirt keeps his head up and steady. The newspaper astronaut says, "I feel excellent under the condition of weightlessness." And from his bench, a scatter of black bands in the hollow air ray out too quick for the eye and cease. Ground observers watching him on a TV circuit said, at the time of this report, he was smiling, Moscow Radio reported. I glance across at him and mark that he is feeling excellent too, I guess, and weightless and smiling. This one's a pretty terrible poem, but, it's no good, but... it involves something that I wanted to read, and I didn't do it any better. So I got one to do first. It's good. This is Transit. Blowing hard at the bus stop, southbound northwest corner, barometer falling, stars falling, but in all that blue sky, who marks that they fall all over out there? Winds off the barren straits, but the sun is blowing too. Reared high out of the nest, snakeheads flap in it till the tear ducts crackle. The whole geste unrolls, black cars, poles, black and white headlines, dentist's floss, wire mesh, heads spinning, and a thorn needle for every solitary tune, even though there's no automatic arm, and it's all plugged in, and everything's coming, but the bus isn't coming. Noon keeps swallowing. Now here's the bad one. The title is terrible, so I won't read it. This is another time. Somebody turned a leaf in a book. A reader. To him, I am smaller than the wrinkle on his thumb knuckle, which also he need never see, and nonetheless has. It is not pity about me for all that. My plain daylight is a plainness of particular beauty. This is another time. The lilac blobs, not pretty, left alone, alive, in the clumsy flume of patch-bricked wind. The same day the chestnuts lit their fady chandeliers and bees put on their shrunk-wool swimming suits, the pump hose poured a river of quick-setting cement over two men in an earthwork, a foreman, an engineer. The clock face has its glass against the windstone sky. This is another time. If the reader stirs and fetches a sigh, turning the page, my sigh is as the wild barley's, a small stir from a cool place. Some asking of brazen questions has had its season. This is not autumn, not one of the four. This is another time. The book and that blunt reader, the turning of a page, maybe the whole bibliothèque vanished there, a language lost. It's not pity about me for all that. No. That was written privately at 10:31 night. And I was not asked whether I wanted it published, and I almost quarreled with Sid Corman because he did that thing. I have forgiven him, but don't read it. That's not, I don't think that's fair. I think there's a difference between private and public. For one thing, I think you polish something if you're going to put it out. Between me and Carmen, there have been enough conversations to do some of the polishing, but if he's going to publish something, I want to fix it for people that haven't the context, you know? So even a matter like that. Yeah. Well, there's a nice quotation from that musician in it. I'll read the translation from that musician, the quotation. Aaron Copland says, when I speak of the gifted listener, I am thinking of the non-musician primarily, of the listener who intends to retain his amateur status. It is the thought of just such a listener that excites the composer in me. I know, or think I know, how the professional musician will react to music. But with the amateur it is different. No treatise or chart or guide can ever sufficiently pull together the various strands of a complex piece of music. Only the inrushing floodlight of one's own imagination can do that. And Aaron Copland, that's lovely. Transit. Blowing hard at the bus stop, southbound northwest corner, barometer falling. Stars falling, but in that blue sky, who marks it? They fall all over out there. Winds off the barren straits, but the sun is blowing too. Reared high out of the nest, snake heads flap in it till the tear ducts crackle. The whole geste unrolls, black cars, poles, black and white headlines, dentist's floss, wire mesh, heads spinning, and a thorn needle for every solitary tune, even though there's no automatic arm. And it's all plugged in, and everything's coming, but the bus isn't coming. Noon keeps swallowing. This is a just before I left Toronto poem in the heat wave there. It's called A Nameless One. Caught in June, a narrow-winged, long-elbowed, thread-legged living insect lived and died within the lodger's second-floor bathroom here. At 6 a.m., wafting ceilingward, no breeze but what it living made there. At noon, standing still as a constellation of spruce needles before the moment of making it whirling. At 4, a wilted flotsam, corn silk on the linoleum. Now that it is over, I look with new eyes upon this room, adequate for one to be in. Its insect day has threaded a needle for me, for my eyes dimming over rips and tears and thin places. I want to read one that I know to be bad. It's because I love the poetry of people from New York mainly who have a language, a spoken language. In Toronto we don't speak much. And we haven't that language, and I tried to use it because it reached me, and it's terrible what happened. But the embarrassment is worth reading this. It's called The Medical Arts. And it's really not written after Alan's poem about the gas, because it's just freezing the jaw in this one. It's a dentist's. Out of the building after the dentist's, via the fire escape, poor pigeon whir, lower left lip swollen still, Novocaine for a cavity. He leaned at the ground story drop, his lip on the cold iron, heels already sick before the bruise, his heart still crisscross lit with the light of rooftops and river, iron stroked up there. But alley dark now welling, patches of damp on the cement reflect a pallor from skyward. No drain pipe offers purchase. Release the iron ladder? How? Wild West concentration gathers, fades. White grimed lip with the back of wrist, and inside, one floor up still, building has him again. With peak rock, cuishon blue, glacial creep, with chalet pony, fine flannel jumpers, window glass in ice, pin papers, rubber bands, jarred nears, woof-woof bladed doorways, freckled sidewalk. Sidewalk leads past alley under fire escape drop. To go in then and see how the jump down looks from here. But there is already somebody else in the alleyway. Side leaned on brick wall, hat down, half whiskered, young, a watcher. Hello, the watcher hitched. I tried to get down from the seventh floor outside there, and I was wondering. The watcher noted the drop from the fire escape, ran his eye up, trying to smile. It's frozen still, the dentist froze it. The watcher turned, astounded. You let him freeze it? Light sprang from him. A toothache comes to you, you want to give it a chance. Lights go on, lower left bicuspid, blue-white. Well, wait, hang around, take it easy. Soon the whole jawbone wakes up to streets of lights. You get it jumping, a city pole right in your mouth. Hiss in your breath, cold days will do it sometimes. Bite down hard, but you can't keep your teeth that way. Have some life out of them anyway while they last, the watcher said. Social workers call that culture conflict. That's a bad poem. People are pink-cheeked only long enough to ferret out what if we were wan and wiser we would let be. Give us the word and we worry it out of its soil and run off with it in form between our teeth and have at it and set up a branch office to do it for people. And oh, the zeal of thy cheek, the tired plumes trailing home. Dust composes its late sunlight petals, ribbons, metals, shorelessness. Unspeakable. The beauty of the unused, the wheat ear among birds or stone chat, the unused in houses as a portion of low roof swept by the buttery leaves of a pear tree where a Manx cat is discovered just now, blinking his sunned Arctic sea eyes in the sun play. The beauty of the unused in one I know of excellent indolence from season into sky-wide wintering should be confidently, as it is copious and new into the morning, celebrated. There's a whole mile of stuff here that's all mixed up with good and bad, and I don't know anymore whether there's any good in it. I think there's funny things here and there, but I think I'll read it anyway. Interrupt me if it's boring. I mean it. All my days have digits in them. It is like living on graph paper. It makes me speak of a sense of direction. Along the furniture, the daylight frumps and frizzles out domesticated. The two men temporarily revert to furniture, large shoes flat on the carpet, suits and seams there to snag the room's sunlight, large pale hands slack and inert. What kind of doctor's waiting room is this? Not tiles and benches like a clinic, no carpet, quiet lamp, table of geographics like a dentist's. You'd think at first the half-partitioned cubicles were for a pants pressers while you wait, and the dim rigging of belts and wheels is like a shoe repairs while you wait. But I feel as though my cubicle were more a bathing hut, and down the dingy length toward the shop's rear glimmers a pale blue light no fixture sheds. The smell of open sky shivers in, too. One instant's child's air. I've rubbed this over so much it's hardly there, but it's necessary for the flow. It's supposed to be the child's air. School meals, familiar squabbles, sun-combed wind swirling us to the glassy evening slopes beyond the backwash, deep hole night. This is a waiting room, all right. Remember waiting for the holiday trip, Carlock flag marbles flapped in air. Instead, you would like to be a prince with a stick over your shoulder and never look back. The holiday came. In the last Main Street, they stopped endlessly for groceries, kerosene, beach hats. I would sweat in the car, watch the long yearning dissipate, terrified and gloomy. Then at the road end, azure miles proved truth was true. I breathed the bone-white air. To keep sane balance after the dazzle of sand, the gladness of swimming, there was a straw must smell on the blankets, and the hairy wood door jamb was stained. When amateurs begin producing watercolors, there is that common mud effect. Too much mixing, or premixed colors maybe, or wrong juxtapositions. That dismalness has hit the cooking. Sometimes I marvel how we caliper and stand, always munching and always potash and flannel. It isn't low tastes or budgets. High cuisine gives you volcanic flow instead of ash. When you're not used to juices, they glut the throat. We lack the physical wit to eat sheep's cheese or lamb in gobbets. Our whole schooling unfits us. We can gloat at the pear tree's leaves after the storm, strong in the sun, but helplessly. No gloss, no nourishment. I've rested. Now for a swim indoors. Dreamed up, the lake a well-thumbed pewter, the sky angry but holding its breath. The doctor will see you now. Oh, she meant someone else. The time is short for coming to grips with what to say. I could rehearse my lines. I can't invent them. Speech in the mind beforehand lies always and only muddles you. Talk in the head is just strutting identity. The believer so fears doubt, he cripples himself with credos, then crouched in his window upper front, resents the lithe and holy pilgrims. Credo, credo. Buckminster, it's about time. Set magazine straight there, stand. This way, please. Dear God, it isn't even roofed back there. The boards still smell of fish blood and old cheese. Mr. Buckminster? Yes. You live in a box? Yes, I suppose so, if that's how you describe what people live in. Don't you care which box? Your first visit? Yes. Can you locate the quality of your complaint before we get to details? For example, are you anticipating the terminal struggle? Do you find the fact of your mortality increasingly gaining an interest? Or did you trip and want the way smoothed? Are you all for proceeding? Which? None of those. I won't make any more notes if that constrains you. You're not a proper doctor. Out in that waiting room, I knew there was something wrong with this setup. You're like a doctor in a credo play. The stethoscope around your neck's all ready to play Holman Hunt at my lost baize door. Everybody remembers the sound of a green baize swing door closing. The nurse comes in. Excuse me, doctor, there's a child. He'll only be 5 minutes, Mr. Buckminster. Would you wait here, please? The consulting room. Two wooden chairs and a pocket-sized backyard with a wooden fence. The dirt's so packed and tramped it makes a good floor. An alley and some kind of tool house with a ridiculous pagoda roof. A terraced chestnut tree. There never are any young chestnut trees in this Jewish city. They make even Maytime ceremonial with their coned candelabra and families gathering, spreading plaid rugs in the small park, prepared to sit out sundown there. The doctor comes back. Sorry we were disturbed. Perhaps you would rather we sat in the surgery. You seem to find something suspect about this simple place. I feel it's rather natural myself. No, sit down. All that about the credo, I stuck in. We met in the middle of some thoughts I was having. Your professional manner put me off. A doctor's office should be one gothic sheepskin, all the rest black and white. trial by your peers. I share your notion there, though not the anachronism. What's the complaint, then? Come to the point. No appetite. Any organic cause? No, I'll answer that one. Fiddle, thump, tap, 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 fiddle. Apparently not. These tests will be final Friday. Meanwhile, at mealtime, it isn't a case for Birkensoft. The treacheries of February are in another calendar, I feel quite sure. Thank you, my medical insurance number. Thank you. He didn't listen to my lonely symptom. 1 minute, Mr. Buckminster. Here's a chip for the air command, very fit. I'll register the duplicate on Friday. My brother's the pilot, Doctor. It doesn't appeal to me. I'm the one that waits till the cone blossoms come and sits under your chestnut tree. The sun is blinding. I will remember Grandma Dooley. The old lilac bushes, shanks and clumps of dead wood cast skeletal beauty, and the garbage can makes its shadow there, as if it were looking into a mirror contentedly. Morning wall, echoing lost country corridors, but you never had time to explore them. There was always the pan of grain for the chickens, or relatives in black satins coming to sit a while after a funeral, or rhubarb to ribbon and chop. The light in the kitchen garden dies. A seashell roar mourns in the attic green of the old pines, and the pine warbler flits among the sand dry, sand clean, thin, sun seasoned, brittle needles. Skip the rest there. This is a little poem I like. The antlers of the ancient members of the orchard lie bleaching where the young grass shines, breathing light. The candles are carried to seek out those in the cellars, granular in their leaves. Because cobwebs are forked away and the wind rises, and from the new pastures after long-stemmed sunset, even this springtime, the last light is mahogany rich of furnishing. This is very orderly. This is the next one in the order, and it's a translation from a very wonderful poet called Juhász, Ferenc Juhász, Hungary. The better of the two big poems here was translated by Ken McRobbie. It's a boy from a peasant village. Juhász was born under communism in Hungary, and he is an apolitical poet. And there's a folk story about the man Stag, and he uses, maybe just by osmosis, that in McRobbie's long piece. The boy comes from a peasant village, and his mother has been peasant before the revolution, and he gets away from home and turns into a stag, and she calls him, and he hears her with all the things he feels, and he keeps saying, "Don't call me, you don't know what's happened." And he looks down and sees what's happened to himself, and he finds a pool in the forest and sees that his antlers are growing. And at the end of the poem, the antlers are the things with lights flashing that the airplanes come in by, and his mother is still calling him. It's a terrific thing. But this is a small poem of his, which I get to read because I translated it. It's from a wheat land in Hungary that's like Saskatchewan in feel. The sadness in it is because his wife was a little school teacher who was in a mental hospital shortly after this and had begun to be ill. And they were visiting her parents on a farm out in the prairie. And I suppose you'd be interested in the method of translating. There was a Hungarian who would do a word-for-word literal, and then you'd go over that word-for-word literal, and when it said stone, you'd say, well, rock or pebble or cliff or house block or something, get it exact in the diction, and then read it and read it and read it with the literal till I could pronounce the Hungarian, though I don't know it, and try and get the exact sound with as close as you could. His images are very, very, well, you'll see, they're hard to pin down. And yet it's curiously literal. It is that Wordsworth world that he writes in. Farm at dark on the great plain. Tingling, sparkling, smoldering, over the mute earth the loose night falls. The verb for falls is as a woman letting her hair down. So a terrible line to translate. Over the mute earth the loose night falls. Glass-petaled flowers, leaves of thin glass, are incandescent as our anguish. Peculiar weeds, lush and fine-spun, dream on, half in the dark secreted, their torsos reaching up into the void like the brooding undergrowth at the bottom of the soul. Suffering and sin flare up in every blade, the parts are not the whole. In the lucid earth dark, all is corruptible. A gleam is all that juts up out of the gloaming. Roof slant, poplar, lip of the trough, moon-tilted swallow soaring, homing, flittering, the hay ricks ripe gold keening. Among the stubble, pheasants move and rustle, the young deer nibble. They shy away from the hare's wide-open eyes and veer out of the light. The moonlight's liquid glass wells over the earth and quells the very silence in its clasp with crystal blocks, glass turrets, tinkling vine stems. Still, how this silence, silvery bushes, half-guessed at stalks, dim files of foliage, entangles and engulfs the din of empty space and murmurous flower scent from the garden beds. The house squats, hunched like a scarab, lest the Milky Way reach down its scaly talons. The sap in the bean vine slowly pulses and throbs, and the withery pods down in the dark recover a newborn firmness. They discover life only in building it, never knowing their lot. Minerals, crystals, water, the flesh-filling cucumber drinks in, swelling its small rhinoceros hide. While sap, like mother's blood to a darkling embryo, seeps through the cells, whole solar systems circle within, galaxies countless crackling as they plummet and weave, so breathless matter lives. All things are incandescent with their light of being. The moon dwells on its waning, the breathing tree on how its leaves must fall. The melon feels its juices sweetening up, autumn's vinegar scheme the tomatoes ponder. The corn senses its kernels thrust from the cob. They have started already to form like pearls in an infant's gums. Standing mindless and mild, the horses sleep, or dream of trailing down again for water and the whinnying gallop after. The sow breathes heavily deep in her slumber. Against her belly, piglets scramble and swarm like a moving pulp of warm craving, a rosy greediness. The cabbage stalks harden and ridge. Under uprights and open thatch lie cartwheels, boards, scrap iron, trash. The spider webs gauze cities swing and dangle. On the warm dung heap the ducks snuggle, and its breath flutters the nettle's candle wick, and nearby wheat and rosemary spikes flicker. Stubble, corn, hemp fields stretch out all around, far off, where darkness is intense as sound. The moon shepherds the flocks, and to the listening field mouse an assured bullfrog croaks. I lie in the drenched grass. Spice perfumes and my senses here converse. These flower cups are metal froth, let cool. The ground flow of air stirs and wafts warmth to me from the stubble fields, and honey smell, commingled yet distinct fragrances. Strange, blissful night, primal, voluptuous, random, with nothing of passion's single-mindedness. Plant cannot guess, nor planet, the knowledge a human bears. Even a man knows little, has but dimly understood how marble is one substance with milk of dandelion and prisoned insects' eyes and blood. Yet as a man I am removed, set apart from dews or Pleiades. In me alone is the tumult of human cares and of love. My pain, my power are from these. From the old earth-soaked dark silences flow, writhing with stems and storm of sap, to the clear lift of the upper silences, one free unbridled power of keening, the exploding star fusing in a primeval shower of metal mist, condensed, compounded, or vomited to the crucible where blast furnace slag floods off, the slower seminal globules crystallizing or vegetation's jelly and mulch, its queer seeds like the winking elements in the core of the fissured rock, all crushed in pluvial fire, molten to become matter, all afire to become real, till the quarries of chlorophyll purpose mire and melt in a plastic flow and the foam of glossy light crams to anthracite, with ululating jungle roar, tremors of flaring fear and mauling, ravening desire, rivered with sweat, the everlasting flood seethes and simmers on in solitude. I love you. You can be aware of it. After all, something new, different from the love helpless matter feels with its heedlessness of tomorrow. No falling star can hear when my heart calls. Here's a picture of the father and mother-in-law. The man is sleeping in his corner, the hiss of his breath catching at a rheumatic crick. In the kitchen, the flickering oil lamp plays over the woman as she leans dozing against the wall. Her old knuckles and veins under the lamplight show a yellow glaze. They are both making ready to die alone, for this too must be done. The splayed furniture strains for a voice remote past time. Sap rises in its dream, leaves sigh, ring wells on ring within. Whining in sleep, it is washed once more by a forest moon. A captcha by the bed, beside one lumpy boot. On the wall, a picture from an old paper pinned flat. A derelict watch chain on another hook. A book mourning unread. By now I know for sure what I half glimpsed before. How senseless your life would be all by yourself alone. And how it would be for me, too, a desolate rolling stone of sadness and brute desire. For animals do not need to be one till they rot. They feed, suckle their young, kill, make water, mate, physical to the hilt. And when star melts into star and all the heavens move, the foaming metals flash and spin and fade, the molten passions lapse, dissolve all by themselves. Mollusk and vermin couple just to breed. Only with you I believe I feel at one, nor need my heart go at last so mercilessly alone to its corruption. Flower and plant filaments slowly to new forms glimmer. The earth bears fruit in an unwitting flow. Thatch, poplar, cornstalks shimmer. And I look on as it topples almost in my face, scaly-bellied, soft and huge as earth, hiding its reptile head among ancient galaxies, its tail dangling over it in some other night of space, the jeweled gelatinous Milky Way, its girth brushing against the lamenting corn silk and the world's bulk. Among the others, but belong by themselves in a group. Just as excessive gladness can drag the three-dimensional uncircumference circle out of its sublime true, unless contrition also past all bound extended. For in the mathematics of God there are percentages beyond 100. So one did witness bear the wounds that inexhaustibly exhaust God's very heart, for unfeeling, scattering creatures make whole one soundless, heartfelt holiness, one blood-washed, joy-besotted new creation. Second one. Sheepfold and hill lie under open sky. This door that is I am seems to seal my tomb, my sealing cell, not enclosed earth or hill. There was no knob or hinge. A skied Stonehenge unroofed the prison, and lo, its walls uprising, very stone-drawing breath, they closed again. Beneath steel tiers all walled I lay, barred every way. I am. The door is flesh, was there. No hinges swing, no latch lifts, nothing moves, but such is love. The captive may in blindness find the way, in all his heaviness he passes through. So drenched with being and created new, the flock is folded close, and free to feed his cropping play, his earth. And to the woolly, willing bunthead, forth shining, unseen, draws near the morning star. When you walked here, took skin, muscle, hair, eyes, larynx, we withheld all honor. His house is clay. How can he tell us of his far country? Your not familiar pace in flesh across the waves woke only our distrust. Twice torn, we cried a ghost, and only on our planks counted you fast. Dust wet with your spittle cleared mortal trouble. We called you a blasphemer, a devil tamer. The evening you spoke of going away, we could not stay. All legions masked, you had to wash and rise alone and face out of the light for us. You died. We said the worst is true. Our bliss has come to this. When you were seen by men in holy flesh again, we hoped so despairingly for such report, we closed their windpipes for it. Now you have sought and seek in all our ways, all thoughts, streets, musics, and we make of these a din, trying to lock you out or in, to be intent and dying. Yet you are constant and sure, the all-lovely, all-men's way to that far country. Winning one, you again in me would begin life, to make new flesh, to empower the weak in nature, to restore or stay the sufferer. Lead through the garden to trash, rubble, hill, where the outcast's outcast, you sound dark's uttermost, strangely light-brimming, until time be full. Four. I will skip. Five. In July, this early sky is a sloped field, a tangled shining, blue-green moist, and heaped up pea vines and milk-hidden tendrils in light so strong it seems a shadow of further light, with a heart large enough to find its succulence and feed and not be glutted there. I look for you who only know the melding and the forming of such heart, and find you here in the sour air of a morning after rooming house hall bedroom, not in Gethsemane's grass perfumed with prayer, but here, seeking to cool the gray-stubbled cheek and the filth-choked throat and the scalding, self-loathing heart, and failing, for he is sick. for I run from you to the blinding blue of the loveliness of this wasting morning, and know it is only with you I can find the fields of brilliance to burn out the sockets of the eyes that want no weeping, though I am he, or I am that babbling boy, aged 20, mentally distracted, blunted by sedatives, and too long innocence without your hand, teaching his the axe heft or throttle bar or grease monkey's gun or any craft or art. And as I run, I cry, but I need something human, somebody now, here, with me, running from you. The sunlight is sundered by cloud mass. My heart is sore as its bricked-in ovens smolder, for I know whose hand at my elbow I fling from me as I run. But you have come and sounded a music around me newly, as though that you can clear all tears from our eyes, only if we sound the wells of weeping with another's heart and hear another's music only. Lord, the light deepens as the summer day goes down in lakes of stillness. Dwarf that I am and spent, touch my wet face with the little light I can bear now to mirror, and keep me close into sleeping. From the pearl and gray of daybreak, you have brought me to sandstone, baldness, the place of jackals, the sparrow's skull, tumbled skeletons of what were hills clothed in forest, and spongy meadows, the place of baked stone, dryness, famine, of howling among the tombs. From the first dews, the grasses at their budding, fragrance of mountain snow and sun-fat cedars to the farthest reaches, where your descent began on the beach gravel, ground by sea-slime teeth, those bloodless horses, to what strange fruits in the ocean's orchards, reaching with light that is perfect, needed no kernels to swell, nor juices to syrup, nor no further making, all newness, all being, that the remotest fish rib, the hairiest pink thing there, might as one fragment make towards the fullness you put off there on the ravening shore I view from my gold-blanched cliffs and shiver. Gather my fragments towards the radium, the all-swallowing moment once more.
I really couldn't.